Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the next episode of Percussion Perspective. This is Kevin.
This is Remy.
And in our last episode, you got to hear Remy interview me, Kevin. And so in this episode, I am going to interview Remy, and you're going to hear a little bit about him, learn some more tricks and tips and info about him that didn't make any sense.
tips about me. Oh, man.
We're getting really good at this. And so I'm going to ask him the same 15 questions that he asked me in the last episode, and then I've got some surprise questions for him, and then we'll wrap it up. So you want to jump right in?
Yeah, man, let's do it. I'm excited to.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
All right. So try to answer them the same as I did. Just about, you know, same length and stuff. Don't just drag on, man. Okay. Question one. How long have you been playing?
I got my first drum set, I think. Oh gosh. I'd have to probably go back through the scrapbooks to figure out exactly, but I think I was 5 or 6 when I got my first drum set. I'm going to go with 5 though. So, and I'm 30 right now, so that's 25 years. And like a lot, I don't know, I'm going to count that as because like, I remember actually having like rhythmic talent at a really young age and like could play drum set. People are like rolling their eyes at me right now. I could actually play drum set like when I was 5 years old. Like I could like check, boom, boom, check, like I could play things like that. So yeah, like 25 years, but then if you're just counting percussion, then, you know, 11 in sixth grade. So, but yeah, like, about yeah. 25 years is how long I've been playing quote unquote the drums.
Yeah. Yeah. Long time. What is your earliest memory? It's kind of, I guess, toward the same, you already answered it, but what's your earliest memory of playing percussion or drumming?
I guess I could go back before that even. The whole thing that I remember, I got a drum set for Christmas, whatever it was, you know, it was like Santa brought it, right? And so the thing that made me want a drum set that year for Christmas, my family used to go to Silver Dollar City all the time in Branson, Missouri. We would go like twice a year or whatever. And they used to, you know, Branson has like all those shows and everything. It's like the evangelical Las Vegas or whatever people call it. And actually this family used to have a show at Silver Dollar City, and they were called the Hay Goods. And they were like, have you ever seen them? Do you know who they are?
I feel like we maybe we used to go to Branson probably once a year.
Yeah.
When I was younger. So we probably maybe went to them once, but I haven't been to them as an adult.
Yeah. They were like a musical family. They had, you know, I think they had like 8 or 9 siblings, and they all like sang and played instruments, and they are really good. And now they have like their own theater in Branson or whatever. Like, but when I was a kid, they were at Silver Dollar City. And you could go see like, you know, they did like 3 shows a day or whatever. And I remember they had this one show where they had like these lights out on the edge of the stage, and they were like, it was almost like a Dance Dance Revolution type thing. Like the light, they were all like spread out across the front of the stage, and their light would come on and they'd stomp on it, and it made like a drum set sound. And then they started each, like, you know, they were all stomping at different times and like playing this drum set groove or whatever. And I was like 4 or 5, and I was like, that's cool. That's what I want to do with my life. I want to play drums. And so then I got a drum set for Christmas that year, and like, that was it. So that's like my earliest memory of just like thinking that something percussion related is cool.
Yeah. Do you remember what brand your drum set was?
My first one?
Yeah.
It was a CB.
Okay. CB mine was Coda.
Coda.
It was just called Coda.
Yeah. And mine was like a miniature drum kit. Right. It was like, it was real. It was a real drum set, but it was like a kid's size one. So
like, I mean, if you were to get like a Breakbeat or a back, what are they? What's the Ludwig ones?
Breakbeats. Yeah. The
no, Questlove the Breakbeats are like real, but he's got like a kid's.
Oh,
he's got I can't remember what it's called now. Dang it.
I would say it's closer to the Breakbeat size. Yeah, okay. It was probably like a 16 inch bass drum, yeah, and like a 10 inch rack and a 12 inch floor tom or something. Anyway, and it had like, you know, the little, I remember it had like a, on the kick drum, it had like a cymbal stand poking up straight up from the middle of the kick drum, you know, with like a little like, tsh,
yeah,
which like that type of cymbal would be like perfect for me now. Cause I'm like really into stacks and stuff.
Like a trash stack. Yeah. Or
you
something.
You could like stack it and make it sound really cool. So,
cool. Yeah.
That doesn't really answer the question completely, but
no, it's okay. All right. Number three, what is your best memory of kind of your high school percussion drumming experience? If you have one.
I don't know if I really have like one memory that is the best. I remember like your answer, you're talking about like finals OBA performances were always really awesome. And my first 2 years in high school, we were 5A and we won 5A OBA my first two. Well, actually it was like 4 years, like the 2 years before I was in, and then my freshman and sophomore year, we won OBA. Then we got bumped up to 6A. But finals OBA performances were always really cool. Our drumline had this tradition of right before finals, your section leader came down the line and put a Swedish fish in your mouth and then you had to keep it in there the whole show. And then afterwards, everyone's like lifting their tongue and like showing their little Swedish fish.
Oh my gosh.
So how could you dut? I mean, if you put a Swedish fish under your tongue, you can still dut.
Yeah. It's
someone's
funny.
Probably flew out of their mouth at some point. I don't know. And I don't know how far back that tradition went. And it would be really cool if like that started, like if I found out that was still going on. Anyway. I don't know. That one probably. So that's like, funny. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, number – what? I care. I think that's funny. Okay, number four. What do you think – or why do you think you stuck into percussion and drumming for going into high school or college? Sorry.
It was just like – is the only thing that I ever saw myself doing once I became mature enough to feel like I could make a decision with like what way to point my life. I know there were a couple other things that I thought about at first. I know there's like a question like that coming up, but, there was just nothing else that I could have really seen myself doing. This is what I'm best at. It's like you said, it's just like that God-given talent of like, I'm a musical person and I understand rhythms really well and have a good sense of time and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I just felt like that's what I'm supposed to do in some capacity.
Yeah, I feel that. So that does just kind of lead into the next question. So did you consider pursuing a different career path ever?
I did really, really briefly. So when I was in high school, I worked in a pharmacy. I worked at like a drug warehouse. But I worked in the pharmacy. It wasn't just like a, you know, anyway. So, I thought there was probably a handful of months where I was like really considering going to school to be a pharmacist. But I just decided, like, I don't know. I saw like they get paid really well. And for the most part, I mean, their job seemed relatively simple. Like they're just making sure that the, you know, the drugs that are being prescribed by the doctors don't have interactions, and they're like counting out pills and filling prescriptions and stuff. Prescription perspective.
Welcome back to prescription perspective.
Gosh. Delete. Everyone's just like, unsubscribe. That's funny.
Sorry.
That's like, this is a complete side note. If this podcast ever really blows up and we actually have like a really big following, and then people go back and like make their own merch based on like really deep cuts from the episode.
Yeah.
Like I could see that being like a shirt, like a shirt with like the silhouette of like a pill bottle or whatever. So yeah, I thought about that. And then I also like, I knew I really wanted to go to OSU. And I thought about trying architecture because they have a really good architecture program. But then I saw like how much math and like all, and I was just like, I suck at math. So I just was like, well, this is what I'm good at. And my wife also went the same route, OSU music ed percussion, a year before me. And I had like a huge crush on her all through high school. We dated for a little bit in high school, and she dumped me because I was immature or whatever, you know, as a teenage boy. And that was a little bit too, like, I wanted to go like follow her, and that worked out.
Win her back.
Win her back. Yeah. Woo yeah. her.
And you so did.
Yeah, I did. It worked. Wooed the crap out of her. She listens okay. to these.
There
two.
We go.
Yeah.
Next question, number six. What is your favorite percussion concept to teach?
I'm kind of dreading this question. Your answer was so good.
Thanks.
Like concept. No. Okay. I really like teaching kids about check patterns. So like, and I think like the first opportunity that I get every year to teach, and I'm like talking sixth grade here, but sometimes not. Okay, guys, quarter notes, and they're in 11th grade. No, it's like when we're learning like 9-stroke rolls and 5-stroke rolls. It's like, you know, there's a check pattern underneath here, and There's a sheet that I use from this book, Rolls, Rolls, Rolls by Joel Rothman. Have you, you know that book at all?
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. I need to send a PDF to you. But it's basically got like measure one is like da, 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 right? One, two, three, two, three, three, four. And then measure two is, and it's just like, they're all in pairs like that. And it really helps you understand like the check pattern, but it's really cool to like teach kids, how to play like these simple roll rudiments right after you've taught them how to play 16th notes. And then they're like, some of them, the light goes on immediately. They're like, oh, it's just 16th notes with buzzes, but some of them don't. And then you're like, well, hey guys, there's like, we call it a check pattern, or sometimes I'll call it like a skeleton pattern. And it's like, well, it's really just, you know, I believe the terminology I used this year was, well, can you imagine if you had a dead body and you power washed yeah. all the flesh off of it and it's just a skeleton? And they're like, yeah. And
one kid's crying.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Most of them were just cracking up. And it's like, well, that's what a skeleton is. Like, if you just take the buzz off of the notes in here, you're just playing one, two, three, two. And they're like, oh, and like to see the light go off, or to see the light go on. Sorry. wow. To see the light go on and kids like understand checks, because check patterns are really important. And that's going to go with you all the way up into like high school. So that would be probably my favorite thing, at least that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's good, too. It's interesting how some things can be like fun to teach, and some are like, okay, here we go. We got to teach. I don't know what it would be, but yeah. We got to teach this.
Yeah.
Which leads into my next question. So what nice. Is your Nicely least done. Favorite concept, that you do not enjoy teaching as much?
I would say like things that are abstract, things that are not as attainable. I know you talked about like reading keyboard. That's always really hard to teach. And it's like, there's really not anything that I dislike teaching. It's just, there are some things that are so hard to teach. So reading keyboard is one of them. And just like, it's like, guys, you just have to trust me. You just can't look at your hands. Like, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to try not to answer things the way that you did, because if it's my genuine answer, then that's fine.
It is
what it is. Yeah. So probably reading mallet instruments, just because of the difficulty of doing it. And I just can't think of anything else right now.
Well, it's the difficulty of it, and also just like how difficult it is for the kids. Like, we know it's hard for them.
Yeah.
And so it's just something that is not as fun to have to go through.
Yeah. But I have, especially this year, with my beginners, they seem pretty good at it. And I think I've found a way, like, I don't really rely on the book to teach them to read music very much anymore. I kind of rely on these packets that I have been making over the last year. And that seems to help them more. Like, it gets them reading over a bigger range faster, I think, rather than like two or three notes at a time. And like the notes are all really close together and they kind of get them mixed up. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Reading is hard to teach.
It is. Okay. Moving on. Number 8, what would you say that you are best at playing wise? What instrument?
Snare drum /
I disagree.
You're like, I've heard your snare drum playing. Yeah. Snare drum for sure. I would put drum set as like a close second. Although, like we were talking about last episode, like I think, yeah, I haven't, like, I just don't have time to play drum set as much anymore. I would say that I've gotten better at drum set in the last few years, but only in the sense of like, keep it simple, stupid. Like, I can make better decisions on drum set now. Like, not every silence has to be filled with like some jacked, choppy drum fill, right, left kick thing, you know? But yeah, snare drum, just rudimental things is what I'm the best at. I think you and I were real parallel as far as like our time in high school and then our time at OSU. We were together, you know, we were there 1 year, and then it was like, as soon as you left, I kind of just like stepped in and replaced you, as far as like, that sounds bad, but like, I kind of like took over like the role that like Wayne gave you in percussion ensembles and that Dr. Missile gave you in wind ensemble. Like, I was just kind of like that next rudimental person in line.
Yeah.
So, and like, again, I'm good at all the, like, I'm a good marimba player. I would say maybe, even though I'm best at snare drum, I think my favorite instrument to play might be timpani. I've always gravitated towards that rudimental side, whether that's like a tom part or a snare, you know, a snare drum part or whatever. Like that, I think about that piece Wildlings that we recorded. Like, that's a rudimental piece, you know, like I am good at things like that because it's all rudimental based. So, I always struggled. I didn't have as much instruction on keyboard percussion, like, you know, until I was like a senior in high school. And so it's just like, I've always felt like I've just kind of like catching up with that, but I'm still a good, you know, good marimba player. But
yeah, whatever you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with all that.
I'm going to disagree with that also.
So then what would you say you're worst at playing is the next answer. You're good at answering the next question.
Yeah. Sorry. Marimba. I'm probably, or just mallets, you know, like that is my, weaker thing. Now, like, I can walk up and play a marimba without any, like, I'm probably best at improvising on marimba, like, weirdly. But yeah, just like I've always been, it's been like this project of mine forever. And it's just like an ongoing thing of like, I need to be better at sight reading for mallet stuff. And I've never really gotten to a spot where I like really feel comfortable sight reading for mallets. And I practice like reading piano and things like that at home. And that helps a little bit, but it's like, it's not the same as playing marimba, you know? So yeah, it's just, I've just spent less time on it. I was, one thing that I think OSU was really good about was like, or our teacher at OSU was finding what you're good at and making sure that you get like, stay really good at that, but then also finding your deficiencies and trying to build those up. And I definitely built up my marimba skills, playing through some hard literature, like some Keiko Abe and stuff like that. But just, you know, I just naturally go towards the rudimental stuff. So yeah, mallets are kind of my weaker side.
Yep.
But I can play hot cross buns with my sixth graders.
You can play it with them?
I can play it with them, yeah.
That's, yeah.
I can't play it by myself.
Baby steps. I can't play it by myself, but I have to have a metronome.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Number 10, what are some of the most crucial things that have made you a good teacher?
Experience. It's going to, like you talked about your teching job. And it's just like real world experience, man. Like I would have been, if I just relied on the coursework in college and like rehearsal practicum and secondary methods and like classes, if I just relied on that, I'd be totally AF'd, you know, like as a teacher. I'm really thankful to it's the same program, right? Because the OSU's in Stillwater and I taught it. That was always like the coveted position, was like the Stillwater percussion tech or drumline tech or front ensemble tech or whatever, because it's right there. And then like Stillwater's kind of out on an island. So if you didn't get that gig, then you were having to drive like to OKC or to Tulsa or whatever. And so, yeah, getting that job and getting in front of kids and just learning how to like trial by fire, basically. But I think it was my sophomore year when I started working with them. And I worked with them for 3 years. And then during grad school, I worked with them for like another 3 years. So getting to learn from their staff but really just being active as a teacher before I was in the field was nice. And then, you know, private lessons too. But I think just to sum it up in one word would just be experience.
Yeah. I'm going to preach it again. Get a teching job. Even if it's free for the first time or something.
Yeah, it's never going to pay. Like, it's never going to pay what you think it should. Like, I think I used to get, like, maybe $1,800 for the whole season, the whole marching season. Which is, I mean, it's not bad, but, like I really cared about it. So I was there, like, every morning I could be there, I was there.
Yeah.
They would have been okay with me being there less. But I was like, look, this to me, this is not about getting paid. Like, sure, it's great to get paid, and that will pay, like, a few months of rent for me. But
yeah.
But I'm here to, like, get better at this. And I think the people, at least from my experience, the people that had those types of teching jobs in college are the ones that, like, are still doing it and are doing it pretty successfully. The people that kind of were just like, oh, I need to focus on school, and I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to practice. And it's like, okay, well, maybe you're a better marimba player than me, but you didn't pick up like that experience. So you're just, you're graduating and you're behind people that have that experience already.
Yeah. And it was also really cool to be able to like, that was the first time as a quote unquote teacher or director that we had the ability to like create relationships with kids and kind of,
yeah,
like we were the really cool kids. We were the really cool directors on their team because we were like the young college kids.
Yeah,
because
you're like 4 years older than those kids or whatever.
Like it was really cool when one of those kids was a senior that I was teching for. He had a really bad like home life, and he asked me to like be his person that he walked with like on senior night.
Oh, that's awesome!
At the football game that senior night. So it was like, that was like one of those first cool moments of like, oh, this is kind of one of those payoffs of being a, you know, an educator is like these kids start to kind of look up to you.
Yeah. It's a big responsibility for sure of like being a, like you're, whether you like it or not, you're a role model to yeah. your students. So, yeah. Cool. But yeah, experience.
Could have just said that. I'm just kidding. Okay. What is something students do that annoy you the most?
Don't try. When they don't try, it's so annoying. And that is like anything from like not bringing their stuff. I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. Like you don't have to be the greatest percussionist in the class. You just need to try. And it's like, I hate when kids are like, but I can't, it's too hard, I can't. And it's like, well, have you put 5 minutes of your own time into this? Or are you just waiting for me to like email you a YouTube video that tells you how to do it in 5 seconds? Or are you just waiting for me to do it for you? Like, yeah, when kids don't understand that you have to try and that this isn't something that's going to be instantly, like you're not going to get any instant gratification out of being a musician.
Right. It's, yeah. Especially
it takes
when you
time.
Yeah. It's annoying to me.
Jeez.
Sorry. What'd you say?
I said, unless you play the saxophone, jeez. I'm just kidding. But
yeah, it's annoying, especially when you're like, when you know it's going to be a hard, like rough pad day for some kids, because you're going to introduce something really hard.
Yeah.
And like a kid tries it once and they're just like, oh,
yeah, and then they're just like in a bad mood the rest, and I was like, hey, remember, I could have chosen anyone and I chose you, so can you like show me that you care about this a little bit?
Yeah, it's like kids, yeah, they like you said it, the instant gratification thing. It's like, yeah, if they can't do it on their first try, they mentally break down sometimes.
Yeah, and I know like kids have always been like that to a certain, and certain kids are more prone to that behavior too, but I will go on my boomer soapbox for a second and say that I do think that like social media and cell phones like haven't helped with that. Like that's why I mentioned YouTube. Like you can get online and basically learn anything about anything immediately, but right. you can't get online and play diddles in time immediately, you know, like that's just, right. You got to do it the old fashioned way. You just got to go practice.
You got to work hard.
Yeah. Anyway. So not trying is very annoying.
Yeah. I'm with you. Okay. The next one, number
play that section of this episode for all my students. next
just
week.
Every day they walk in
every day, it's going to be going.
Number 12. Do you have an influential teacher or director from your past?
Yeah, I have a couple. So my first one was, or is, these are all alive. My first one is Rick Wagner. He is now at TU, University of Tulsa. He was my like head band director when I was at Bixby. And so he didn't like teach me percussion directly, but I just always really, really looked up to him. I really like, he used sarcasm all the time, and I use sarcasm with my kids a lot. Like I just, but he was also like super smart, like super high IQ, but he is one of those people. I'm still like, I'm friends with him now, which is really cool. because I've worked with him in and out of, you know, different things. But he's one of those people that has a very high IQ, but also like can have a conversation with you still. Like, you know, like there's some people that are crazy smart that just can't talk to people. So he's like kind of both. But I just always really looked up to him and really admired the way that he ran things and he cares about his students. And so, yeah, Rick Wagner was probably the first one. And then the next one would be Kenny Martin. I think he listens to this sometimes, but he was like my first percussion teacher. He wasn't a full-time percussion teacher when I was in school, but he soon was like hired full-time there after I graduated. But he was the one that basically showed an interest in me and was like, this is like, you're good at this and you can make a career out of this if you just have someone to kind of show you what you need to do. And so he put me on the path to like audition at OSU and blah, 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 blah. And we're friends now today too. So, so yeah, Kenny was very influential and was kind of the one that made me want to go play, or continue playing. And then Wayne Bowmanchin, our college professor still at OSU, really influential and like just kind of teaching, like he had very high standards. And so it was like teaching me to have high standards, but also like good relations with your, good relationships with your students. And we got to, you know, like go to PASIC and like we did some really high level things while we were there. And while you were there for some of that too. So those three guys.
Yeah. All great people. Number 13, moving right along. What's your favorite rudiment?
There is never a time that I don't sit down at a pad and play flam accents or flam taps. And so I would say like, probably flam accents because they're the most versatile. Like,
yep.
You know, you like, you've got just your good old flam accent. You've got your flam drags, you've got your cheeses, and then you combine the two and you've got your flam fives. So yeah, flam accents are just fun. they're just really fun to play.
So it seems like flams. You just like flams a lot.
Yeah, I do like flams.
And adding flams. That's an interesting thing to teach a beginner right off the
flams,
bat. Yeah, gosh. Just like, hey, we're going to
– dude, that might be my least favorite thing to teach,
actually.
We're going to
use both of our hands at the same time, but not at the same time.
But not at the same time and not at the same height. And if you lift your grace note past 3 inches, I will yell at you.
Yeah. Yeah, those are stressful to teach, but that's not what we're talking about today. Number 14, do you have a favorite piece? Or, of course, you do, like you said, but what is your favorite piece you've performed?
Symphony number 4 by David Maslenka. So it's probably one of the only times that I've had like an emotional reaction during a concert. Yet, like, obviously music can be highly emotional, but if you don't know that piece, just go listen to it right now. I mean, it's like 24, 26 minutes long or something. And it's 4 movements, but it's just like continuous. Like it's not like chopped up into movements or anything. That might not have made any sense, but that's just an amazing, I mean, Maslenka is my favorite composer. He writes amazing music, but he also like, he treats percussion as an equal instrumentation, as an equal instrument family to the winds. And his percussion ensemble writing is fantastic. But yeah, Maslenka 4, I just remember I've performed it twice in my life. And I remember the first time I did, there's just, you know, and like there's a lot of like religious connotations in his music too. He quotes a lot of He quotes a lot of hymns and things like that. And so like, those are meaningful to me as well. And I just remember like playing that for the first time and getting to like the climax of that piece, which is like maybe the last 2 minutes of it or last 3 minutes. And it's just, yeah, I mean, just literally like playing, and it's so loud and so amazing sounding. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, the OSU Wind Ensemble, when we were there, is like one of the best in the country. And just playing that, and like, just like tears in my eyes playing it. It was just so, so cool. Such a cool experience. And yeah, so that's my favorite piece that I've ever played.
Yeah. Did you play it twice with OSU?
Yeah, I played it once in undergrad and once in grad school. Okay. And played different parts.
They waited
and
for
I'm
you
pretty
to come
sure
back.
Pretty sure cried the second time too.
Yeah.
But just while I was playing a different
part. You
I played
cried
because like,
you realized you hadn't gotten any better.
Yeah.
Since the first time
you still
played
can't
it.
Play this. Still can't play this measure. No, I actually did play a harder part in grad school, but yeah, the first time I played that tuned gong part, and it's just like at the end is so awesome. And yeah, just smashing these gongs and crying anyway.
Okay. Last one of the 15. What is one of your goals as a percussion educator?
I think you can kind of look at it like two ways, like, on my list in the next few years is like, I really want to start submitting tapes to like Midwest and PASIC and things like that, which I think you said in your interview too. But like long term, my overall goal is to create lifelong musicians. Like I want that's the sentence, right? That's like the mission statement or whatever. I want my students to love playing music. I guess you could say create lifelong musicians / create good humans. You know, like I want my students to like be good people and treat people well. And I hope that I like lead by example in that way. And then want them to continue with music. Like there are a lot of programs that are really, really good, but they don't have a super high or they have like an alarmingly low rate of students that continue in music. So I think it's like a real fine line between inspiring someone and then burning them out. You know, like you want to be good. It's not any fun to suck. But also like there's more to life than rehearsal sometimes. And so it's like, that's my goal, is to have my students like continue in music.
Yeah, that's good.
And I have a lot of them that are in, maybe not like I have a handful of them that are going to school for music, but a lot of them just like have continued playing, which is like, that's one of my like proudest things right there. It's like, I have a lot of students that are still in music. So,
yeah. Okay. That wraps up the 15. So these are going to be the random ones that you are in no way mentally prepared for. Okay. Number one, other than water, what is your favorite beverage?
Coffee.
How do you take your coffee?
Black or with some oat milk. I would say 2/3 of the time I do it with oat milk. But if I'm just, or, and then like 1/3 of the time is just black, but I'm kind of you kind of know we're both kind of coffee snobs, but I thought about it.
I'm not a coffee snob. Okay. I'm really not a coffee snob. You probably are more than I'm fine with a nice iced coffee that tastes like chocolate milk.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that either. Right. I mean,
okay, number two.
Kombucha is so good. Like, I think I might change my answer to kombucha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing? Is that official?
I think so.
Okay. That's going to change everyone's thoughts about you based on that.
I'm sorry, guys. It helps
my tummy.
It's good
for your gut,
right? It helps my tummy, man. Yeah.
Okay. Number two, good? Like, what is your all-time favorite? You could sit down and watch it day in and day out TV show.
I have like a handful. I think if I had to just choose one, it would be The Office. But I've just watched it so much. Like it that used to be just like the background show, right? Like I had watched it so many times and used to be the background show. Now Sarah and I kind of go through, we go through like phases. We really just don't watch that TV much TV anymore because like we have a daughter and we don't want her to watch TV all the time. We're already ruined with like screen time and stuff. We're really trying not to have her grow up with that. So we don't watch very much TV. But I really like New Girl. I really like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Parks and Rec. You know, if you like The Office, then you probably like Parks and Rec. But yeah, if I had to just pick one show, it would probably be The Office.
Same.
Because I've watched it so much that it can just be literally any episode can come on and I know exactly like what is, you know, I know exactly
what's happening in the whole world of the show. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Steve Carell is like one of my favorite actors. So.
Yeah. Okay. Number three.
Yeah. Numbers go up.
what's your favorite pizza topping?
Just one?
No, like what's on top of your pizza? I should have phrased it like that.
Okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with just a dirty old pepperoni pizza. But
dirty
like
old.
Well, that pizza joint that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like just a pepperoni pizza from them is crazy.
Well,
good.
It's because they like put cheese down and then pepperoni and then cheese on top. The pepperoni is like hidden.
Oh, they tuck under, it in. Like, yeah, they tuck it in.
So it's
like
warmer.
Good night, babies. I really like vegetables on my pizza, but it makes me mad if they're just like raw vegetables because then they release all their water like when you cook them and they get all soggy. I don't know. Between that and the kombucha, I know you're annoyed with me now.
No, but I'm not.
I really like mushrooms on pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
Like at Hideaway, which is like, you know, a big pizza place in Stillwater, right? If you went to OSU, they have a pizza of the gods that is like tomatoes and mushrooms and artichoke hearts. That's a really good one. But I think my favorite pizza I've ever had was in Lawrence, Kansas at this place called Limestone Pizza. And it was like a farm to table pizza place. And they put like prosciutto and arugula. And then they cracked an egg on top of the pizza and then cooked it. And then you had like in the middle of the pizza, you had like this runny egg, like a, you know, over easy egg. And yeah, that was amazing.
Interesting.
So yeah, something along those lines. I don't
know. All right. Next, number four. What does your morning routine look like?
sleep as long as I can before, like, snooze my alarm, sleep as long as I can, get up, fumble through my, I think we're very opposite on this. Like fumble through my clothes with my like not even my phone flashlight, just the ambient light from my phone because it annoys my wife so much when I wake her up in the morning accidentally. And she's a super light sleeper. So I'm like just desperately trying to get my stuff together as silently as possible in the dark. Usually go wee-wee and then brush my teeth and leave, man. I get dressed in there too, obviously. So that's about it.
Perfect.
Now I've tried to reinvent my morning routine a few times and like, you know, which started with like laying my clothes out the night before or like, oh, I'm going to work out in the morning. And I'll do that for like a few. That never works out. You know, it's just pun right there. It's just too stinking early. So I work out at a different time of day now. But anyway, yeah, I wouldn't really say I have a morning routine. It's just get up and get out of the house as fast as I can.
Get up and figure it out.
Yeah.
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 Okay, last one. If you were a percussion instrument, what would you be and why?
Oh. Okay.
So what personality do you think matches up with what percussion instrument that you have?
That I would never would have guessed you asked that this was going to be a question.
Sorry. That's why it's at the bottom of the list.
Timpani.
Because you're tunable.
Because they're dynamically, it's like the range of timpani dynamics is crazy. And a lot of the time it's just like four pitches, right? It's like kind of like strict, but you can change a drum if you need to. Like I'm like open to change, you know?
Okay. Okay. That was, is that pretty good? Was deeper than I thought you'd go.
Yeah. Snare drum because it's awesome.
I thought you'd be like, I'm a vibra slap, so I only make noise if somebody hits me or something.
I'm a vibra slap because I love Crazy Train. Yeah, I would say timpani. That's probably okay. A good one.
Good answer. Okay, yeah. Well, that wraps up our.
That wraps up our interviews. Wow,
our interviews. That was fun.
That was fun.
I hope people liked those learning about us.
Yeah, hopefully. So, guys, we'll get back into like our normally scheduled programming, educational stuff. But we wanted to just have some fun to start 2025, and let you guys get to know us maybe a little bit better. And yeah, we hope to be bringing you more and more this year. Hopefully, have like some exciting stuff coming. The beginning of this year, we'll have to see.
We will. They will have to wait and see.
You'll have to wait and see. We'll know. Right.
I don't even know.
Yeah, we don't know either. So anyway, guys, thanks for listening. As always, send us an email if you've got anything, if you think of another question that you want us to answer, or if you have a recommendation for an episode topic or anything like that. But hope you guys are off to a good year with your, or a good start with your year. And we'll holler at you later.
Bye.